97.9 FM, WCHL welcomes Jeff Danner, author of Common Science, on Chapelboro.com with his weekly insights. And now, here's Jeff on the WCHL Afternoon News.
He's back, Jeff Danner with Common Science, joining us again after a brief hiatus. Thanks for being here today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I'm always sorry to miss it. It's just this summer has turned out to be a particularly busy one for me, and I've been out of town far too many Mondays.
But you and Donald Trump both, am I right?
I don't know if I really want to be compared to Donald Trump. This is a science show, you know.
That's true.
We believe in science here.
More contrasted
science.
With Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton both, because she she believes in science.
There we go. That is a much more favorable association. Thank you.
I think talking about the CBS News report that just aired on Donald Trump criticizing the parents of the Muslim soldier who died during the Iraq War, and how everyone's just sort of piling on top of him, and oh, this is going to be the straw that broke the camel's back. Like every single time, it seems like he gained support from his supporters for insulting people who you really shouldn't be insulting. Like, he's done this literally dozens of times now, and it only increases his support among the people who like him, because that's what they want him to do.
Yeah, but that was a dynamic, as long as we're on politics for a moment, that was a dynamic during the primaries. I think, you know, with the end of the two political conventions, we're, I think, now in the real political season, and we'll see. And there are some indications already in national polling that that's not helping him. I mean, perhaps there's a hardcore, but even just one thing about the CBS News report, and we often comment on the CBS News report.
When
it's playing, Aaron and I are usually having some commentary here. And you'll notice
MST3King in the background with the microphones on.
And oftentimes I'm critical of CBS News if they're talking about a science topic, but I want to say the gentleman who did the report came right out and didn't say the comments made by Donald Trump, which some say are disrespectful, which have been interpreted. He just said the disrespectful comments.
Yes.
And so I appreciate that kind of reporting, especially when it aligns with my own views.
I am more concerned at this point, and like we're still very much up in the air as to what's going to happen in November. We are going to get to science stuff in just a second, by the way. Human science, I guess psychology, this counts, right?
Sure,
it's a hard science. Yeah, there we go. But they're still up in the air over how the election is going to shake out, who's going to win. But I'm almost equally concerned with if his support among those sort of hardcore supporters is strong and increasingly strong as we get more and more into the election. What happens if Hillary wins? Like, those people are not going away, and they're going to be that much more angry if Trump loses. And like Ann Coulter said this weekend, that she'll just go to writing cookbooks and mysteries, which is great as far as I'm concerned. But there's still a lot of other people who are going to be really politically active and not in a good way if that happens. So I don't even know.
Time will tell.
Time will tell. All right. So let's talk about science, and it's still political because we're talking about the Rio Olympics and the environmental concerns surrounding them, particularly with regards to the water, right?
Yes. So let's just talk through what the problem is, what the concerns are, and then how it came to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so the essence of the story is if there are some Olympians, rowers, sailors, swimmers in the triathlon,
some swimmers, right?
Who will be in the water in the bay around Rio, and we'll talk about why. But I mean, generally speaking, there's poor sewage treatment in the city of Rio, and so
I feel like that's optimistic. Suggest that there's sewage treatment at all in the areas.
There is. We'll talk through the but as you've had that poor sewage treatment and the population continues to grow, that's a lot of burden on the water. So in the water around Rio, there's about three times the amount of fecal coliform bacteria. And the reason they picked that is actually it's a proxy species, a wastewater treatment plant, be it Owassa down at the bottom of the hill here, anywhere, as they judge how well they're doing in cleaning of the water. You don't look for a million different bacteria species because that would be a very lengthy and expensive test. What people have found over the years is that if you kill the fecal coliform bacteria, you're killing the rest of it.
Okay.
So it's a proxy species.
It's a good benchmark.
So if if the when you hear that the bay around Rio has three times the amount of fecal coliform bacteria that's considered safe, mm-hmm. I want people to understand that means there's three times of everything else.
Okay.
That you want not to be in the water.
Yeah. So it's not even that we have to be concerned about the fecal coliform. It's just that's a sign that's of a sign the things of that we just, should be concerned
yeah,
about.
Yeah. It's all sorts of bacteria. And then on the viral loading side, which is even more troubling, mm-hmm. in terms of what safe water conditions are set by the EPA, there's 1.7 million times higher viral loading in the water around Rio than what the EPA would consider safe. So if you take all of that put together and you just the general scientific assessment is that if you at the moment were particularly as a foreigner, mm-hmm. I mean, it's some of the same dynamic. If you live in, you know, the people say, when you go to Mexico, don't drink the water.
Right. But people who live in Mexico can
become accustomed to some of those species of bacteria. So here again, someone coming from outside that doesn't have their microbiome is unaccustomed to these local bacteria, there's a 99% chance that someone drinking 3 teaspoons of water would get sick.
Wow.
Now, and by sick, I mean, we're talking about gastrointestinal disease.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that's the, it's not like you're going to go in the water and get, I don't know, some bizarre.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like just, sick it's to just, your stomach.
Yeah, but it's generally just sort of gastrointestinal distress.
And three teaspoons, like, you're not, like, one at any beach is, like, taking a cup and, like, dipping into the water and drinking it. But that's what you can get if you're just swimming around and just ingest a little bit by mistake.
Yeah, someone swimming in the water. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, certainly anyone swimming a triathlon swim would certainly get that much.
Absolutely.
You know, that much in their
ingestion. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let's talk about sewage treatment quickly in general and then what happens in Rio.
Okay.
Okay, so sewage treatment in 60 seconds or less, when sewage comes into a plant, there's what's called primary treatment. Mm-hmm. That's just filtering to sort of knock solids out. That's simple.
Right.
And there's secondary treatment. And that's where you have you intentionally grow bacteria in your plant and let the bacteria eat things.
Yes.
And those are good bacteria, and they're chewing up everything in the plant. And then tertiary treatment at the end involves filtration to take out even tinier particles. And then in particular, you tend to use ultraviolet light to disinfect the water. So that's what would kill any remaining bacteria had come through the filtration system.
So basically like irradiating it.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. You zap it with UV and that would also, it kills the bacteria, it deactivates viruses, and that's what, you know, that's what typically happens at a, you know, at a modern wastewater treatment plant. Mm-hmm. But now, if we go down to Rio, the city of Rio, about 65% of the wastewater generated is treated. Primary and secondary. Mm-hmm. And then they take that water and they run it about 2.5 miles out to sea and inject it about 100 meters or 100 feet underwater.
Okay.
And let it go out there. And so, you know, before, you know, I did some quick history checking, and that was a pretty common thing to do in the United States up until even the 1950s.
Okay.
Because you're just putting it far out from people. Mm-hmm. And so that 65% of the sewage that's partially treated and sent way out to sea is not what's causing the problem.
Okay.
Or it could, maybe indirectly, but most of the problem is from the other 35%.
Why don't they send all of it out that way?
Well, because the other 35% is from low-income neighborhoods.
Okay.
Where there are no
sewers.
So this
is like the increased population and overburdening the system, right?
Yeah, so you've got people who are living in typically the slums is the typical word.
And
those houses don't have sewers, and people are managing it sort of however they can. And so every time it rains, you get this other 35% of it is coming into the water around Rio, just untreated. Mm. And that second process is what is generating the problem in the water. And it's just, you know, to me, it just strikes me. We talked a little bit beforehand, and we have a little bit of warning to listeners. We touch a little bit of politics, right?
Right.
But the people who get the sewage treatment in the sewers are the 65% of your wealthier people. The people who don't have sewage treatment are the 35%.
Yep.
Yet, you know, if you sort of ignore these to me, which is sort of social infrastructure problems for long enough. Well, now everybody coming to the beach, you know, it's they're enduring the same problem. Everybody wants to go to, you know, the beaches around Rio. They're world famous.
Right.
But now you've got this common.
I was thinking about this earlier with the, and we were talking about this with Deb Stroman earlier this hour, like the extent of the. The extent to which we're talking about this in the context of the Olympics, this is after Rio officials and Brazilian officials did at least, you know, obviously not enough, but some to take care of the problem. So it may be a little bit better at least than it was before. But this has been an issue for many, many years. And every single tourist who came to those famous beaches has been swimming in that water. And every resident of Rio, and, you know, maybe the microbiome is a little bit more used to the bacteria, but nevertheless, like, you're a resident of Rio. If you go swimming in that water, you're dealing with it too.
Which is, I mean, just a couple of quick comments on that. They said we'd clean it up. A couple of things. I do want to say just for a moment. Just from my family and I went to Brazil in 2014 to go to the World Cup.
Yeah,
and we had just a wonderful time. Just, you know, nice facilities.
Yeah, you
nice
came back
people.
Raving about it. That was
And I feel a little bit badly for the Brazilian people because they're getting a lot of bad press at the moment. Look, they're not going to be ready. Look, they don't clean their water.
And the World Cup went off fine, right?
Things went quite smoothly. There were issues
like there are with any major sports event. But
Now, in this case, though, you know, sometimes, again, you know, we mentioned before, sometimes you don't want to be around me when I'm reading the news. I'll say, that's ridiculous. That's impossible. And so, you know, the claims that the Olympic Committee in Rio suggested how much sewage they would clean up, it was impossible from the get-go. Because some of these infrastructure projects, I mean, they're massive. They take decades, right? I mean, you just think of the miles and miles and miles of pipe that runs underground and all of the construction time and the money that goes into that. And so, you know, it was clear to me from, and other people familiar with the process, not like I was the only person, but that this was really not going to happen. It was all just a feel-good speech.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's really... You know, as we get back to politics for a little bit, I mean, part of the reason that I'm, you know, creeping up on being a socialist is, you know, these sort of infrastructure projects are what underpin society. And it takes decades of people paying their taxes and good governance and wise thinking to have this infrastructure in place.
We've got this blinky red hotline light between us, and I was really hoping that it would just start blinking when you said socialist there.
But, I mean, that's, you know, I think, you know, and I think sometimes we here in the United States are the people who came before us, our foremothers and forefathers who did all that time and built all this infrastructure. Now you can hardly see it.
Yeah.
Right. But it works every day. You turn the water on, it's clean. You flush the toilet, and it doesn't pollute the water downstream. Yep. And I think, you know, hopefully, you know, that's something that that Brazil can get to. And those are some of the goals of developing countries. But they were just too far behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
Between when they were awarded the Olympics and now, to have, you know, done a really meaningful job. In fact, I think what they tried to do was clean out and move some of the favelas. I mean, I think they relocated some of
Deb
the people.
Deb Stroman was talking about that
so that the guests wouldn't have to look at the poor people. But then indirectly,
the primary concern is the Potemkin village, right? You make it look good, even if it's not good. Yeah.
And then I guess indirectly, since that's the source of much of the raw sewage, I mean, you know, indirectly that would reduce the sewage. But that's really, you know, when they said we're gonna make the situation better, I don't think anyone understood that their plan was just to relocate. People, but
So what does this say about the selection process for the Olympics down the road? Because, like, if you're right, then the Olympic Committee should have at least either if they didn't personally see this coming, they should have at least been able to consult with people who should have said, look, they're not going to be able to do this in 7 years.
Yeah, I think, you know, the selection committee people, I mean, I don't know how often things like sanitation come up. And they should. I mean, especially when you're trying to move.
I think the laundry comes up a little bit when you're talking about the IOC.
But this is a common. I mean, not this particular issue. But whenever there's the Olympics, preparing for this massive influx of people to come to a place for a short period of time. I remember, like, what there are all kinds of problems. Like in Russia, they had the Winter Olympics.
Yes,
and all of the toilets clogged up because, you know, somebody, you know, tried to save money on pipe and put little pipes in. And
yeah,
I mean, it's just kind of a, I think sometimes getting off topic, which is common for us, but you know, maybe like in the World Cup, which is another large international mm-hmm. sports competition, it's awarded to a country.
Yes.
Right? Well, that makes it, you don't have to move, you don't have to concentrate so many people
in one small place.
Of a space.
Yeah.
Now, it's convenient if you're a person attending, although I've never attended the Olympics. I don't know, do people go to the Olympics and go to, track one day and swimming the next day?
I feel like a lot of them might. Yeah.
So it would be a hard...
I mean, it being the Olympics, it's all combined in one place, so you'd the point of the Olympics is to try to get as much of the experience as possible. At least that's what I would do if I were there.
Yeah, so it wouldn't work.
It's actually not a bad point, though, if you had sort of the equestrian events in one place and some of the Olympic events, I know, and I'm pretty sure it was that way even in the U.S., like when you had the Summer Games in Atlanta or the Winter Games in Salt Lake City. Some of those events took place quite a ways away from the host city, so mm-hmm. you can just expand that out a little bit and
make it more regional.
Yeah,
you'd be able to manage
the equestrian events in Louisville. And
health,
the
safety, sanitation would be easier to manage. I mean, you hope coming out of this, I mean, oftentimes the hope is, this will shine a light on the problem,
right.
The Olympics will make some money, and then there'll be this massive infrastructure investment that'll come out of the profits. And it shines a light on the problem
until the Olympics are over, and then everyone leaves and everyone forgets about it, and then you have this half-done infrastructure that's doing nothing for nobody.
Yeah, so.
Anyway.
We'll see. I'm glad I'm not swimming in Rio this summer.
Yes, yes. Did you go swimming when you were in Brazil 2 years ago?
We did. Although we were on the north coast, I did do some research.
Yeah.
And we were in smaller cities, mm-hmm. which is another issue. But in fact,
yeah, because it's not all of Brazil. It's Rio specifically.
Yeah, well,
right?
It's
the
partly
larger cities.
I mean, the two factors are the size of the city, mm-hmm. And the extent to which there's sewage treatment, and how things are managed. So we were on the north coast.
Yeah.
And we swam every day.
Yeah. I kind of have to imagine it's probably not too far off from like the Atlantic coast in the U.S. where like go to the Outer Banks and go swimming there. Maybe not so much New York City.
Yeah.
A little bit less.
Yeah. Again, before we look askance at our Brazilian friends, it's not uncommon to hear about beaches in the United States being closed for bacterial loading.
Yep.
I mean, we have some of these problems ourselves. And so it's just a question of, again, it's just sort of the boring sort of but incredibly important infrastructure investment on all sorts of areas that help a society run. That's my
Can we wrap up by getting back to politics and saying when you go to the polls and vote, think about infrastructure
absolutely
and how important it is
absolutely.
To keep that
and
going.
I think I wrote an entire series about that.
I believe you did. Yes,
a recent political election. Those those things matter.
Yeah. They really do. And it's all the we've talked with Tom Stevens up in Hillsborough about this because they've been focusing so heavily on their wastewater treatment plan mm-hmm. and the stormwater fee and all of those boring things that nobody really wants to talk about. But they're the most important things in town, and they're the most important things in the state and the country.
Yeah.
Like making sure the trash is picked up and you can get on the roads and drive from one place to another without having your car fall apart from all the potholes and, basic things like that. Anyway, all right, so that's Common Science with Jeff Danner, and you can check out the archives on our website, chapelboro.com. We'll have this conversation up there very, very soon. Jeff, thank you so much. What do we want to talk about in future weeks? We're kind of doing it ad hoc this summer.
Yeah, a little bit. I have been following the coal ash cleanup situation mm-hmm. in North Carolina, as well as some interesting developments and announcements in nearby Tennessee.
Yeah.
And I think that's a worthy of a conversation. Maybe we'll get Blake in here with us. He's been my coal ash hookup in the past. So.
All right. I don't know if Blake wants to be referred to as the coal ash hookup. But.
Well, he just was. And it's live radio, right?
Yeah. So he's going to be walking in here in like 20 seconds.
I mean, do you have me on 7-second delay maybe?
Oh, God, no. It's no fun if we have anyone on 7-second delay. We're flying by the seat of our pants here. All right, Jeff Danner, thank you so much.
Thanks, Aaron.